Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday as we make the turn toward the weekend. Game 7 of the World Series is tonight. Bye week for Penn State football. We'll talk with Donnie Collins of the Scranton Times Tribune in just a few moments. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. But
Tuesday night, you know, NFL football.
I also realize that, you know, you're all like locked into being this bartender tonight.
Yeah, gonna have a lot of fun. Drinks for Pink. Celebrity bartender will be at Rooney's Pub, New Columbia.
My problem is, I think that based on what I just heard, you may have started.
No. I can't start till 8:01. Yeah, Rooney's Pub, New Columbia, just off the West Milton exit of Route 642. Then just look for River Road at 642 and turn onto River Road and you're there. And we'll be there from 6 until 8 tonight. Taking tips for the Breast Center at Evan.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun at our Drinks for Pink nights. By the way, Cookin' Men last week was the best ever in the history of Cookin' Men. Over $51,000 alone was raised for Cookin' Men last week for the Breast Center. So,
By the way, just so you know, if you look at the numbers, the facts and figures, of all the countries in the world, no country has a better cancer survival rate than the United States. So you wonder about your money, where it goes, how it helps. That's the result of it. The United States is number one in the world in cancer survival rates. That's because everybody's come together to fight it. And that includes nights like tonight.
Okay, so this was the cut we were going to do from the World Series last night. Anthony Rendon, 2-run homer.
Harris is 1-0. Swinging a high fly ball left field, sending Brantley back onto the warning track, at the wall, looking up, and it is gone! Anthony Rendon puts it into the Crawford boxes, and the Nationals lead the ballgame 5-2 here in the seventh inning. It's Anthony Rendon's first World Series home run and his second long ball of the postseason.
Rendon, of course, grew up in Houston, went to Rice, so sweet homecoming for him. Once we got you focused on what your job is, I feel like we're seeing results.
Much better when I'm not multitasking.
There's only one person in the station that can do that.
Well, it can, but is it effective? That's the only thing.
But enough on Roger. All right, so... jeez, I really miss Harry. All right, so... All right.
Who says hi? We caught up with Henry. We caught up with Harry today.
Well, between Portelli and Harry, my goodness. And then, you know, then we go into the bullpen. It's like going to the Arizona Diamondbacks bullpen. Everybody finds religion. Hey, could you help us back here? Oh, God, please help me. Oh,
we're
God,
in the Washington Nationals bullpen, too. I mean, I think that's what's going to drive Nats fans crazy tonight. It's just, how long can Max stay in there?
Throws too many pitches. I don't think he can get through six. But I think Greinke's only going to get through four or five. Neither starting pitcher will be active participants at the end of this one tonight. Strasburg was awesome last night. 5-0 in this postseason. Nationals have 11 postseason wins so far this year. He has 5 of them. Wow. And Verlander still has never won a World Series game. Now, he was, 2 years ago when they won, he pitched really well, but he just didn't win the games. As the, quote, winning pitcher, but he did pitch well. All right, Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Donnie, welcome. Great to have you with us.
All right, Donnie, this is what I need from you. I had to listen to McGloin all afternoon. I need a different Scranton perspective. So how are you doing today?
hopefully better than McGloin. It's the sunshine and the birds are chirping. It's a great day. So I'm sure Matt's out golfing or something. I don't know what he's doing.
I think
he's
still drying out. I mean, he was soaking wet on that sideline.
Better him than me.
Yeah, better him than I'll tell you a quick story. After the game, Jack said, well, you know, Jack Ham says to me, he says, Steve, I said, what do you think about getting back to the buses? We just cut through the underneath of the stadium, get to the tunnel, and then we'll just get wet going from the tunnel to the bus. He goes, no, that's a good idea. So we go out there, and the elephant door is closed. And this girl, Claire, I think she's a student there, pulls up in a golf cart. And so I asked her, I said, can we get through there? And she says, no. He says, all the gates are closed in there. So Jack looks at her and says, could you give us a ride over to the bus? She says, sure, hop in. So we go around. I covered myself with a jacket. Jack was underneath the, because it was a covered golf cart. There, and I looked around and said, we are the softest broadcast team in America.
And Jack could probably get a ride anywhere he wants, I would think.
Well, I don't think she had any idea. She said, hey, these two guys don't look that threatening. Get in the golf cart. Let's go. So what did you think about Saturday? Because they've gone through a tough stretch at Iowa, home with Michigan, at Michigan State. What do you think?
I mean, I'm going to say something probably unpopular here with most of the people who want to see 50 points scored. I thought, outside of the penalties, that was as good as you'd expect. In those conditions, against that opponent on the road, and third game in a really, really tough stretch, I thought Penn State played really well. I went back and watched the game again this morning. They're getting better. They're making some mistakes, but you know, I'm willing to look at the second half there where they scored 7 points. It's aided by the fumble recovery, but you know, I thought they ran the ball better in that game than they had. You know, than the numbers would have indicated they ran it. And I think that, you know, they came out and again, I was pretty surprised at how many people thought that could be a trap game. I certainly didn't think they ever thought, you know, this game. I thought they went into that game extreme, and they played beginning to end, and the defense, you know, stood up and caused something working, and they didn't let history. And I think that's really impressed me about this team this year, considering how young they are. They've overcome some of the things that have plagued them in the past 5 years under Franklin, you know, not being able to finish games. These guys finish games, you know, getting past some opponents that have always given them trouble. I mean, they didn't trail at Iowa. They didn't trail at Michigan State. So I you know, everybody had this three-game stretch circle, and they came out with, you know, not always perfectly, but I thought they finished it better than they started it.
I thought, and this is the word I used in the post game, and this may not be the one you'd use, but I said I just felt like it was a surgical performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I put it on Twitter. You know, it's amazing that it all starts with Clifford. So I always think of him first. But it's amazing that, you know, you talk about accuracy issues with him. And then you look at some of the stretches in the game where he just throws perfect balls. I mean, the throw to Freiermuth, was obviously on the first touchdown was an unbelievable throw. I thought the one to Hamler on the play before was an even better throw. I mean, he's off balance. He's not throwing off his back foot. He's rolling out a little bit, and he had a lot of arm strength to get the first down to Hamler there. They left some plays on the field. There were some drops, but you know, it was raining. It was pouring.
It was pouring.
It was so much worse than it looked on TV.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought they left some of those plays on the field. But he, you know, I think his first 14 passes, 13 were catchable, and one of them, you know, was at the Daniel George's feet. And it just, it was the pocket collapse. But that's a great defensive line. I'm surprised that he didn't have that issue more often. So I really. You know, these guys have done what they've needed to do, what they've been able to do. You know, they get a big lead, and they trust that defense isn't going to lose it, and they don't, and that's exactly how they played this game. And I was just going back and watching it again, outside of the penalty,
right?
You can't have those against a great team.
That's exactly
but
right.
But outside of that, they've been. I thought that was as good a performance as you could possibly have expected, given the conditions, the opponent, the location.
What has Penn State's ability to kick the ball, for the most part, with efficiency? I don't care what Stout kicking off. Pinniger, obviously, is the placements. But Blake Gilligan, what has that allowed James Franklin to do when it comes time to play the chess match?
You could argue. I would certainly argue this. If you're going to list who are the top five most valuable players for Penn State since Big Ten play started, you're missing the boat if you're not counting Gilligan among those top five, because he's pinning mediocre offenses.
Yeah.
And which are bad offenses against Penn State's defense. But he's pinning these mediocre offenses inside the five. There's just no chance. And when you're giving yourself a 21-point lead, you know, two straight weeks, and you're really controlling Iowa. And he probably won on the Iowa game. He pinned Iowa, I think it was three times inside the five. He was doing the same to Michigan State.
Yeah.
And you combine it. It's not just Gilligan. You're combining it with, I mean, it's amazing to me how often on punt coverage, Hart Lob and Cassetta and,
yeah,
you know, Stoll, are the first guys down there every time. You know, it's like they're not even being blocked. And you know, he's able to hang the punts when he wants. He directionally kicks. I think he's doing okay. I mean, a lot of the reporters don't like the rugby style punt. Same with the fans. But I think he's doing okay on those. It's not his style, but he's doing all right when they need to do that. I just think he's, you know, he's been healthy this year. I expected he'd be better. I think he's back to being maybe the best punter in the Big Ten, maybe one of the best in the nation. But you know, these guys, if you're going to play a field position game, once you get the lead, and he's doing that, he's allowing them to play field position, and they're dominating it.
Right, exactly right. They are certainly doing that. The average drive start for Michigan State on Saturday was their own 19-yard line. Penn State's average drive start was the 42. So if you're talking 23 yards, 13 possessions each team, you're talking 299 yards of hidden yards just in field position.
It's incredible what Gilligan's given them, and you know, and I said earlier with the penalties, you can't commit those penalties and beat Ohio State. But you could beat Ohio State if they're going to start at their 19. You make them. That's how you beat them. You make them move the whole field, and they're good enough. They could do that. Minnesota's good enough. They could do that. But you give yourself a really good shot when you're not turning the ball over. Number one. And number two, when your opponent's starting inside, it's 40 every time. It's really been incredible, and that's beyond Stout, who's been really, really good. I think on kickoffs, even with a couple of mistakes lately. But
yeah,
I think overall they'll take what Jordan Stout's given them. But Gilligan's been out of this world.
When you're talking 42-19 in field position, you know, obviously some of that happens to be, you know, takeaways, which they had, but the punting part has been, I think, remarkable, because you can now play the chess game. You can shorten the field up when you do something like that for your offense. There's just a lot of elements that go into it as to what they're doing with the punt game right now. And again, they won explosive plays. And again, they won giveaway takeaway. And again, they had the only points off of a takeaway in the game. They got 66 points off 14 takeaways. They're plus 7, Donnie.
Yeah, we were looking at the plus minus numbers on turnovers. I was surprised it wasn't like even more in Penn State's favor. They never turn it over, but you know, whenever they seem to get a turnover, it results in the points. They're not intercepting a pass and then, you know, three and out. They're making teams pay for it. I mean, the punt's a big play in the game.
Sure,
you know, Sowers muffs it, and you know, they're able to get it back, and they're able to essentially finish off Michigan State there. But the couple of interceptions Brisker's had at the end of the games have been big, you know. And yeah, they've done a really good job converting these into damaging points. And you know, when you don't get a million turnovers, and I think there's teams producing more, but when you don't get a million of them, it certainly helps when it seems like you do. And you know, every time they get a pick, they're scoring, or it's a game-ending situation. So I really think that defensively, these guys have passed every test. They've been as good as advertised, and when you add special teams taking that big step from last year that they've taken, it's I think I picked them to lose 3 or 4 games in my preseason prediction. But if you told me defense is going to be as good as we think it is, and the special teams are going to be that much better, I think then you start to say, hey, they can do this on 1 or 2 losses.
And just so everybody knows, Penn State is, and you talk about quick change, Penn State is averaging nearly 5 points per takeaway. I mean, that's impressive. The timing of the bye week, Donnie, how good is it?
Huge. I mean, I think if you're going to design the schedule and you're going to get 2 bye weeks, you put them when they were. You get one right after non-conference games, and you get to reevaluate yourself after a tough game against Pitt, and then you're looking at, okay, we're starting the Big Ten schedule. We got that really tough 3-game stretch. We're going to circle that and see if we can go into that really big. Then we'll evaluate ourselves once again. We come out of that. You get another bye after 3 really, really tough games.
Yep.
And now you can rest up, and now all of a sudden it's not just we'll see how we could do down the stretch. No, you're looking at, we have a chance here to be a college football playoff team if we finish this out the way we want to be able to do it. So now they really, really need to hit this bye week out of the park. But to have that game against Minnesota in 2 weeks, it's going to be a big game. There's no chance here that they're going to go into that limping. Franklin said after the game that with a couple of injured guys, he doesn't think are going to be it's going to linger into that, which will be impressive. So I think they have a chance of going fully healthy you circled the other 3 games, but now these 3 games, and I think the Indiana game is going to be absolutely huge. That's a team that they could beat them. I think that's their real track game. But they're certainly not looking at it as a collective like that the next 3 games. But this gives them a shot to say, hey, what do we need to do? Where are we lacking here after the last 3 games? And how do we fix that going into 3 games that really could make this an iconic season?
Donnie, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. Anytime.
Was this the song that the suit and Laura were listening to when she was in perfect harmony and he looked robotic?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's definitely the one.
What a sad video that was.
What, from the holiday party last year? Yes.
Oh, the holiday party last year. I mean, I can tell everybody, the deal on that was quite simple. I'm working the room, and we looked over, and he was sitting there. I'm like,
Recharging.
I mean, it's like watching the Pirates clean house doing it like 2 months at a time.
Well, there's the Nuttig way and everybody else's way, so.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's a little different.
A little different.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. We're going to talk about the name, image, and likeness coming up in the next half hour. There are a lot of different... What makes it complicated is that it is not as simple as how California has made it. Now, the California model is simple. So, I mean, you make it. If you make it, take it. That's the California model, quite simply. Okay, well, if you're going for a pure professional model, all right. But that's not what this is about. You're trying to balance a scholarship with the ability on your own to make some money, and there's a lot of different avenues to do this. Now, look, there's going to be the usual, hey, we'd love to have you come by our birthday party, and we'd love to, we'll give you a couple $100 to do it. Why don't you come on by? Or say you're a running back at Alabama. We're going to give you $35,000 to come by our birthday party here at the lake. So we'll get into some of the areas that make it complicated while attempting to use the collegiate model. It's one of those I really would not want to be in the room for. Because I don't really have a lot of answers.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. All right. So, Penn State will take on Minnesota noon, week from Saturday in Minneapolis. The advanced forecast says 24 kickoff. It's fine. And we'll get more into that next week. Both teams are off this week. And then Indiana, by the way, plays Northwestern this week. Then they get a bye week. So this will end up being three consecutive opponents for Penn State that have had a bye week before they played them. Because Michigan State had a bye week as well. With multiple bye weeks in the season, it's going to happen. And I think most of you know by now that Antonio Shelton has been suspended for the game. And again, the respect I have for James Franklin, where he's looking at it, I mean, would Antonio Shelton help Penn State in a game like Minnesota a week from Saturday? Yeah. Now more is going to fall on the shoulders of not just Robert Windsor, but P.J. Mustipher, Fred Hansard, who's quietly turned in a very good season. It also means that guys like Damian Barber and Judge Culpepper will have to step up against a team that can run the ball well, like Minnesota does. But principle is greater than winning at all costs. James Franklin is a man of principle. I respect what he did here. And I will also point out about Antonio Shelton that for 3 months, from the beginning of May through the first week of August, he interned with us along with Cam Sullivan Brown at WPSU Channel 3. And we work, you know, our desk setup is in a quad. I mean, I could have if I wanted a bigger area to work with, but I've always worked in the same area, and I said, I really don't care. So I've always worked in this, like, four desks put together. Antonio was always the one sitting to my left, and Cam was sitting across from me. So I worked around him for 3 months. I can tell you, he is a terrific, thoughtful guy. And he made a mistake. Made a bad mistake, but he made a mistake. A moment of bad judgment on his part. Well, as somebody who was around him for 3 months, I know it was a moment of bad judgment because that's not him. James Franklin did the right thing, but Antonio Shelton, I can assure you, is a good guy who had a bad moment. And haven't we all had bad moments? Well, except for one guy. We continue to celebrate his awards.
We do. Every day.
That's because we're contractually obligated. All right, so...
well-deserved awards.
Yeah, sure. I thought you read the card well.
In one take, yes, yeah. For a change.
The last time that we did this, it took between the two of us, and part of it was like we felt like we were choking on a pretzel.
Yeah,
you really well-deserved.
It's getting weird. It's like, hey, we got to wrap this up. You got to get to Permanente's for the coaches show. It's like, yeah, it shouldn't be this hard.
We just couldn't overcome. But, again, I worked around him for 3 months. I genuinely like this young man. He's just very thoughtful and hardworking. Did a great job for us. So did Cam Sullivan Brown, by the way. Did a great job for us. And he had a bad moment. James Franklin has addressed the bad moment. Now you go to the game. Antonio will be back eventually, but won't be back until they play Indiana. Okay. Now let's get to name, image, likeness. There are a lot of questions about this. And part of it is, how do you handle it? Do you, for example, add someone in compliance to specifically monitor this issue? I would say probably. Or multiple people to handle this issue. Do you put somebody on staff that helps handle requests for the athletes? My guess is probably not, but if we're sitting in a round table and brainstorming, it would be at least something I would bring up. If it's rejected, it's rejected, but still have to talk about it. Which then brings up the next part. If the university or somebody within the program or athletics is not helping in the setup, or is not taking in requests for the student athlete, then who is? Is it an agent? Is it a representative? Or do you have to go directly to the student athlete themselves? That has to be worked out. Do you put somebody on staff? And I would say probably not, but do you put somebody on staff that makes them understand the tax ramifications? Every athlete that does get a request to do something is going to have to familiarize themselves with something called Form 1099. This is not just a simple, hey, I got cash. Well, when you get cash, you have to, you know, there's also something that goes with that. So those are some of the issues. Now let's flip it over to the other side. We've talked about staying away from impermissible benefits. Okay. But how do you police this? When you look at our great state, well, obviously Penn State football in particular is thriving with the fan base and has put itself in a position where they are ingrained in the fan base. And I would say the other sport is Penn State wrestling that has done that. And by the way, Bo Nickel, U23 world champion today. Bo Nickel, U23 world champion today. Beat a wrestler from Russia 12-2 to win it. There are certain athletes that will be able to make some money. And like, and some of them is going to be, hey, can you come down to my establishment, sign autographs, take pictures? We'll give you, you know, let's just pick a number. We'll give you a couple $100, come down for an hour, 2 hours, drive traffic. Now, that's going to happen a lot. But I'm talking about the big money. And in Pennsylvania, we have already the Steelers, the Eagles, the Flyers, the Penguins, the Phillies, the Pirates, and the Sixers. Just in this state, we have 7 professional teams, which, by the way, populate the 2 biggest markets in the state. Penn State football, of course, is a statewide entity. But then again, do you want Carson Wentz as your spokesperson, or do you want pick Penn State player as your spokesperson? So there'll be a lot done locally, without question, and the student athlete would be able to garner some cash locally. Now let's go to a state that does not have any pro entities. I'm talking about major pro entities. I'm not talking about minor league sports. Alabama. In Alabama, the Crimson Tide happen to be there in terms of how they look at it, their professional team. I'm not saying Alabama's a professional team. I'm saying that the fans of Alabama look at them the way Steeler fans look at the Steelers, the way Eagle fans look at Philadelphia. Alabama fans, that is their team. Yeah, Auburn's there, but Alabama fans, that is their team, their baby. So, Tua Tagovailoa is a big star in the state of Alabama. In this state, you have Ben Roethlisberger, Carson Wentz, then you have Sean Clifford. In Alabama, you have Tua Tagovailoa, then you have Bo Nix. So the opportunity, potentially, for the star quarterback at Alabama, in a state with no pro teams, that's a huge advantage for them. How do you then take care of jersey sales? Because of the O'Bannon case, schools proactively change jerseys. Instead of picking the number of the year or numbers of the year, they sold the number for the season you're playing, which this year would be 19, and also one. Now, in this case, KJ Hamler is obviously a very popular player, so people wearing one. But do they have for sale 11? No. 14? No. You can get one, you can get 19. At Northwestern, you can get 1, 19, and 51. 51 is the number Pat Fitzgerald wore. He's the head coach, but that number is also retired. And it's retired in his honor. Say they allow jersey sales to go back. And now you're going to pick 14, 11, 99. What's the formula for dividing the money on that? I remember that Mitch Albom statement in the Fab Five documentary that was so well done that Jalen Rose produced. And Mitch Albom saying he's walking down a street in Ann Arbor with Chris Webber and they see his number four jersey in the storefront. Oh, they make all this money off of me, and I don't get anything, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's part of this argument. Now, what Weber didn't say, that evidently he was making money on the side and not just a few coins. And that part didn't make the cut in the piece. What do you do with the money brought in for jersey sales? Do you can't just give it to the athlete who's looking around saying, hey, that's my number. Yeah, but that's your number in a Penn State jersey. So what's the allocation between athlete and university on the sale of said jersey? Next, what do most people want when it comes to college football in this settlement? They want EA Sports to bring back the college football game. A lot of fans want that. I don't know if you've played it before. I've never played it.
I have not either. I'm more of a old school video game player from back in the day.
I think Kevin's played it, though.
Yes.
I think if we were to ask Kevin, Kevin would really want the game back. I think he's talked about that before.
I know he's had multiple copies of the NFL version, too. Yes.
Yeah, I'm talking about Kevin Herr here. He would really want the game back. Well, in the case of O'Bannon, who won, and this, in of course, his picture was on the college basketball game. They stopped making the game. Years ago, I said about the game, I was looking at a TV commercial, and it was Carlos Hyde and Braxton Miller, and of course, it's, quote, in the game. And I'm looking at the detail, and I'm thinking, boy, it doesn't take much imagination to picture that that's Braxton Miller and Carlos Hyde. Looks just like him, even though they don't say their names. And I thought, the NCAA is going to get in trouble for this. Now, the NCAA may have taken the profits, for all we know, from the games, and they may have put them to terrific uses. I don't know. So for me to jump, oh, yeah, they kept the money, I can't do that. That's not right. It's not fair. So they may have taken the money and put it to terrific uses, helped out other athletes, whatever it may be. But I thought, they're in trouble with this one because you can't keep using the players and you keep it all and they don't get anything. Now, eventually it was a settlement. Everybody got a few pennies. I mean, like, I'm talking like, when I talk about the money the players got from that settlement, it was like dollars. It wasn't hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars. They got dollars. And most of the players, I'd walk by the lounge, hey, Steve, look, why don't you announce this? I'm in the game. They didn't care about money. They're like thrilled they were in the game. Now, that's not going to be the attitude of today's athlete. It will not be. So if you want to bring that game back, how do you value that? And how much does the student athlete get? My greatest concern in all of this, and it always has been and always will be, just don't do this in such a way where financially people look around and they have to say that they have to cut sports. I don't mean football, basketball. They'll be there no matter what. That's what TV's doing. But I'm talking about the Olympic sports. You know, men's soccer. By the way, the Penn State men's soccer team beat defending national champion Maryland last night 3-2. They're like 9-2-3 in the season or something like that. They're ranked 15th or 16th. They're playing really well. Or women's soccer, softball, you know, gymnastics, something, fencing. I don't want them to cut sports in any way, shape, or form because those are student athletes too that are on scholarship. Now, you notice I didn't say wrestling. Penn State will not cut wrestling. They will not do it. Right? They'll never do that. Everybody's too proud of the whole deal here. The problem is, what if 50 schools drop wrestling? Then who are you competing against? I know some schools have now brought out women's wrestling. Okay? But you're talking about a handful of schools that have done that. College sports as we know it will not look the same in 5 years. And at this moment in time, they've got to handle this issue right, or better yet, as well as possible. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. So last week, Bellefonte and Balde Galeria in Center County played each other in high school football. The two schools are separated by about, I'd say, 3 to 5 miles. 3 to 5 miles. So it is an absolute rivalry. They play for the Curtain Bowl. Bellefonte's had a good season. Balde Galeria's had a good season. I believe Balde Galeria is the number one seed in the district. The coaches broached to the players the idea, because they had a couple of injuries, of sitting the starters and playing just the backups. Right? They then let the players decide, and the players decided that, yeah, that's fine with us. this is your big rival, and in order to be ready for the district, you sat? Really? I couldn't in a million years. And I can go back to when I was 17 years old. Okay? So I'm going back 44 years. When we played our rival on Thanksgiving morning, 10 a.m. And there is no way on the planet I would have skipped that game. There's no way on the planet I would have skipped any game. What the heck's going on here?
And the week before that Belfont Baldwin area Curtain Bowl game, Belfont was supposed to have their senior night at their home field against Bishop Carroll, and Bishop Carroll decided not to show up because they had a depletion of players on their team.
They did, and I guess they had enough. They had enough come back where they could play Clearfield the next week, and that's just a case of numbers. Baldwin area doesn't have a numbers problem. They have about, I think, 50 players on their team. But they looked at each other and said, we'll sit out? What?
You'd have kids almost 3 weeks not playing before their first playoff game.
It doesn't matter.
Rest over rust?
They had a this rust stuff. If I had a game in front of me, I'm playing.
But that would stick with that in the NFL, not high school ball.
Goodness. Something's not right.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.